IPE@WU Analysis, the podcast by students of the Institute for International Political Economy.
Welcome back to WU Matters, WU Talks. Today I have the honor of welcoming to the studio an icon in the financial sector and our expert on currencies and exchange rates, Reinhard Jung-Reitermeier. Welcome to the studio. Thank you for coming.
Thanks for having me.
So Reinhard, if I may address you informally.
Of course.
Today we are talking about Switzerland's 2015 abandonment of the fixed exchange rates with the euro. Could you give us a quick overview of what has happened and why other countries have not done the same?
Certainly. So, you see, to understand that, let's travel back a bit in time to 2011. When the euro was kind of experiencing troubles and a lot of investors were thusly fleeing to the Swiss franc and invest there, thusly raising its worth astronomically. And of course, Switzerland didn't want that because it hurt their export products and it made everything more expensive for the Swiss people. So they decided to tie the franc to the euro, thus kind of distributing the investors a little bit more evenly. Okay. At a fixed exchange rate of 120 to 1, and took on the responsibility to buy and sell as many foreign currencies as they had to keep that rate at that level.
Okay, and can you maybe give us a little bit more information what exactly happened 2011 in the Eurozone? So why did the Swiss exactly do this 2011?
Well, the euro was experiencing troubles. Mm-hmm. Again, as I've already said, the value was kind of uncertain. There were economic troubles, which continued for the next few years. And investors were kind of turned away from the euro. They were very, very scared is probably the wrong word, but they were,
you can say
yeah,
like
they were very uncertain, let's call it that, what to make of the euro, while the Swiss franc was much more stable. So the entire European market more or less flocked to Switzerland, completely overwhelming it. So the decision between the EU and Switzerland to tie the two currencies together and distributing this flock of investors on one hand, but also of course stimulating their trade partnerships, was at the time a very good decision on both parts. It helped the euro gain investors and thusly a little bit more stability, and it kind of deterred that incredible surge in worth in the Swiss franc. Now come 2015 and the troubles of the euro have kind of risen again in the past few years. So 2013, 2014 were economically not the best years for Europe, and 2015 was again a year of uncertainty, and it wasn't really clear, would the euro grow back to its former strength? Would it fall down into never seen before weakness? It was nobody was sure. And at the time, the Swiss government had big troubles keeping the fixed exchange rate of 120 to 1. They had to sell and buy a lot of currencies that they didn't really want to or wouldn't have otherwise, because they really wanted to stimulate their own economy a bit, but weren't able to. So it was tough for Switzerland to keep up that fixed exchange rate. But I think it's interesting to compare that to a country like Bulgaria, for example, which in 2015 also thought about maybe separating the lev, which was tied to the euro for around 8 years by that time, separating from it so they could stimulate their own economy. But they ultimately decided against it. Now, why did Switzerland decide that one way and Bulgaria the other way? Is an interesting question to ask ourselves.
But
in that
before we go into this question, I would make to make a summary so that the audience will know where we are at now. So we can say that from 2011 to 2015, Europe was in a financial, not really a crisis, but it was not sehr stabil. Stability was not gegeben. And that was the reasons why they did that.
Yes.
Is it okay to put it that way?
Yes. You could say both the tying of the franc to the euro and the abandonment of the tying of that fixed exchange rate was basically to the same reason, the economic instability of the euro. Now, why did the Swiss really do that? Well, as we've already talked about, they were trying to stimulate their own economy, which they couldn't do when they had to keep up a fixed exchange rate. Mm-hmm. Now, Bulgaria, as since 2007, an EU member, couldn't, from the very beginning, do that much, really. Even if they abandoned the fixed exchange rate with, by the way, they really weren't allowed to that much because they are very much preparing themselves for taking on the euro eventually. That is the goal.
Sooner or later they will have probably the euro.
Yes, yes. They are very much on their way to be part of the European Currency Union as well. So that they really couldn't deviate from European policies as much as Switzerland could, as very much not a part of the European Union on one hand. And of course, kind of also tying into that once again, Bulgaria as part of the European Union and thusly also of course part of the European Trade Union, they need to give investors that stability of exchanging euros for levs and knowing that the day afterwards that exchange still holds its worth. You know, it's unattractive if a currency deviates too much within one market, as the European market is supposed to be, you know. So they had an incredible interest in keeping euro investors happy, while Switzerland, well, not so much, really, because it is not part of the European Union, it is not part of the European Trade Union. Of course, it is an export champion, we all know the chocolates, the watches, etc. But it is an export partner of the European Union. And of course, the fixed exchange rate was attractive at the time they had it, but they weren't that dependent on it compared to Bulgaria. You know, an exchange rate deviation for Switzerland wasn't that big of a deal. Of course, when they did in 2015, their rates once again surged. It became overnight basically worth more up to 20%.
Oh,
and
really?
Yes. Oh. And of course that hurt Swiss exporters. No doubt about it. It became much more expensive
to buy the goods from them.
Exactly, the marginal rates, the winnings you could achieve from trading with the European Union became low to none overnight. Of course, it wasn't for all sectors the best decision, but with the power gained to stimulate their economy as much or as little as they wanted to, Switzerland kind of got over that sooner or later, you know, while Bulgaria, as a part of the European Union, could have never done the same thing, if you think about it.
So the Swiss had a little bit more political freedom than the Bulgarians.
Of course. And not just political freedom, because they weren't part of the European Union, but also the liquidity to do so, you know. The Bulgarian National Bank didn't have quite the means the Swiss National Bank does to stimulate their national economy however much they wanted to. So I think when comparing these two countries, it really boils down to the European Union, both in terms of the European market, how much you want to be participated in it, and, you know, participate in it as a part of it, like Bulgaria, or as a partner of it, like Switzerland.
So there's a big difference between a partner and taking part in it.
Of course, yes. Okay. You know, within the European Union, that kind of freedom of trade, freedom of workers, etc., kind of demands
so that people know what they get. So that can maybe explain why they abandoned it and the other ones did not?
Yes, very much so. So, but both the European market and, of course, the European legal system. Mm-hmm. Once again, Bulgaria didn't have the means to stimulate their economy however they wanted to, even if they abandoned the euro. And abandoning the euro would have very much been a borderline illegal decision, to say the least. You know, they have the deal with the European Union going on, mm-hmm. That they are very much trying to get the euro eventually. So they don't have the freedom to do whatever they want. Switzerland, of course, does.
Yeah.
Now, how much of a good decision it was to abandon the fixed exchange rate with the euro is its own question, because as we know, in the following years, 2015, okay, yeah, let's not talk about 2016 that much, but definitely 2017, 2018, 2019, the strength of the euro compared to the franc grew and grew. So Switzerland, let's just say, didn't take the best path here, I think, but one that they could definitely deal with. One that they could definitely deal with. And
just a question for interest. Mm-hmm. Do you think it would have been a better way if they would stick to it, to the fixed exchange rate, or is it better for them to abandon the exchange rate afterwards? Just a feeling. I don't want an exact answer. Just a feeling. What would you say?
Just a feeling. I would say definitely for the few upcoming years, yes. I think in the next few years, it would have been a better decision to stick to the euro, because the euro grew stronger in those years. So, you know, the stimulation of the economy would have happened more organically than with currency decisions, as they did in the reality we're living in. But of course, speaking from the distant year of 2023,
mm-hmm.
now you have to ask yourself again, with the current problems the European Union is facing, yeah. compared to Switzerland, if they didn't back then, would they consider it now? And I think the answer to that is probably yes. Okay. I think hadn't they done it already, now would be the latest time where they would be like, okay, mm-hmm. we don't want to stick to the euro that much. And
just another question, because yeah. I see we are already running out of time.
Mm-hmm.
To Bulgaria, I want to hear something a little bit more about Bulgaria. Why did they not abandon the? Why did they abandon?
Yeah. Well, as we've already talked about, it mostly boils down to not being able to, really.
Okay.
As part of the European market, you can't simply take the certainty from investors that if they trade with you today, it's still worth the same tomorrow. That works for like expert distances, possibly even across the sea. You know, nobody. Mm-hmm. When you trade with a currency from far, far away, you are aware that there is that risk of losing a bit of money, but also very much a chance of gaining some. But, you know, within the European Trade Union, that's something you don't want to. That kind of speculation, yeah. that kind of risk is something you don't want to, especially considering if
the
you...
community.
Yes, what you don't, what you can't forget in the European Trade Union is there's a lot more consumer trading here, you know.
Yeah.
As a private person, I can drive over to Bulgaria and invest or buy or sell there right now. In Switzerland, even though it's probably even closer, I can't do the same thing, you know.
That's
I very much have to work over expert programs here and import ways, and you know, you have to respect the border,
yeah.
Kind of, while Bulgaria...
It's more like a hard border than like to Bulgaria.
Exactly. Yeah. So Bulgaria kind of has to give the consumer as well that certainty of not having to deal with the ins and outs of financial markets or just go over there, exchange a euro and buy something,
because,
you know?
Because I guess the normal consumer don't know too much about it.
Yes. And, you know, it is very much a goal of the European Union to protect their consumers from having to deal with these kinds of problems, because it makes the entire concept of a trade union less attractive.
Certainly. Some interesting insights from you. I think that's our time anyways. So thank you so much for visiting us in the studio today and illuminating both our listeners and, of course, myself.
Thank you. It was a pleasure being here.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Want more information? Visit the Institute for International Political Economy at www.wu.ac.at/IPE. You will find podcasts analyzing current events, TikTok videos defining key concepts, and courses explaining the world.